Welcome back. It is time again for our monthly visit, the Sensible Heating and Cooling Podcast. Phil Jensen is here. I'm Corey Lopez. We're heading into hot weather eventually. At the time that we're recording this, though, it's been wacky weather here for the spring. Typical Colorado weather, I guess. I'm going to ask you this first. How difficult is it for people to decide? Well, and is it okay for people to turn their air conditioner on for a while and then switch back to their heater and then their air conditioner and back to their heater?
Yes, that's perfectly fine. But aside from the fact that it drives everybody crazy, but it doesn't affect the equipment in any way. It's a good time of year to change filters and check them and just make sure that there's good airflow.
It is the one thing that I start thinking about when I'm flip-flopping back and forth. You know, I live in Colorado for a long time, so that's usually the case. But that's the burning question that we have on the podcast here today. That was the one thing I wanted to ask.
People want their swamp coolers started up, but if it's too cool, then the water lines can freeze up. So if you have an evaporative cooler, that's not as easy. But with air conditioning or a heat pump, it's not that big a deal.
I lived in a double wide, and sometimes I would forget to turn my heater off when I turn my swamp cooler on, and that was kind of a wacky. You know, the systems are two separate systems, so obviously they're not paying. You know, that's pretty analog to have a swamp cooler, you know, that was sitting on top of my roof, and I'd kind of forget, and all of a sudden I've got both units going, so that was always a problem. It's nice when you have central air and you can just have it all on one little thermostat.
Right. Yeah, what you don't want to do is have the evaporative cooler running and have the furnace running at the same time. That's a big waste of energy.
I always wondered why my bills were so high, and I realized what I was doing there for a while. We wanted to talk about, heat. I mean, the heat is here. Here we are in June, pushing into July in 2022. Air conditioning units are rolling. You hear there's an energy crisis going on?
Yeah, a little bit. That's seems to be front and center these days with gas prices being what they are.
You and I are old enough, we remember what it was like in the 70s and 80s with the energy crisis then. They say it's not quite as bad because we're not to the point where we're almost rationing. You know, we got to that point in the 70s, I remember, particularly with gas. But it's getting close. And so people have to be mindful now. Can you run your air conditioner all day?
It's actually better, too, because then you don't try to cool the house down at the last minute when it's 90 degrees and the house won't catch up. And with newer equipment, it's so much more energy efficient than things that are 10 or 15 years old. So running them all day is actually preferred if you have like a two-stage or modulating. It's a lot more energy efficient to do it that way, believe it or not.
What are good temperatures to set your air conditioner at?
Sort of the mid-range for around here is maybe 75 degrees. I have one customer that likes their air conditioning at 62 degrees, which is frigid. That's more like a meat locker.
Yeah.
But I would say most people set it somewhere between 73 to 77.
And 77 when they're not home, 73 when they're home, is that kind of a basic, and again, your range could vary a little bit, maybe 78 and, 74 or whatever, but cooler when you're home, obviously, and then you don't want it to work as hard when you're not there, right?
Right. So I would say that most people, try to keep it around 75 during the day, and then like what we do is we'll turn ours off at night and then just open some windows up. And, for people with issues, with asthma and allergies and things like that, opening windows isn't always a great option. But you can always set the temperature up a few degrees, and then that'll save a few dollars in electricity at night.
Yeah.
Xcel actually has a three-tiered rate system now. So from, I believe it's from 1 to 3 o'clock, they charge a mid-level tier, 1 to 3 in the afternoon. From 3 to 7 in the evening, they charge their highest level tier. This is just during the summer. And then from 7 until 1 p.m., they charge their lowest level. So it's something that they implemented to get people to use less electricity during the heat of the afternoon, which is when the highest demand is.
So that's something people can think about. And at the same time, if people don't do anything about it, so I mentioned the, and this is actually a Fox News story that kind of got us thinking about air conditioning. But if they don't do anything about it, we're talking about the energy crisis that is going on right now, which is actually I kind of pulled from a CNN business pool. Then we're going to end up having rolling blackouts, the brownouts potentially, if we're not helping. So kind of keeping an eye on that three-tier system and maybe taking advantage of that might help.
Yeah, what I think might be a smart way for some houses to do it would be to cool the house down in the morning, you know, get it nice and cool so that when it starts to heat up in the afternoon that, you know, it's not going to be using as much electricity, at least we would hope not. And keep the windows shut, which, you know, with all these fires from the smoke from the fires that we've had the last couple of summers, you know, might be something that's happening again this summer.
Indoor air quality. You talked a little bit about asthma, people opening up windows. I mean, we do it too. I mean, it's nice. It cools down here in Colorado. If you live close to the foothills, you live in the mountains, well, it's perfect. You can just open the windows up. Some people can't necessarily do that, but we should all be thinking about indoor air quality, too, and that is available from Sensible.
Yeah, we've been talking to customers a lot more about air filtration and ion generators, which help with the air filtration, especially removing smoke smell. And so there's a lot of technology that is commonly available now that was not as common 5 years ago.
You want more information on indoor air quality? We've done a lot on it since the fires over the last couple of years, really. You can find it on the website at sensibleheat.net. We've got a lot of blog topics on it. We'll talk about it in a later podcast, too. We'll get more into the indoor air quality. I just thought it was something we should mention. And we talk so much about it in the winter. We've got to talk about it in the summer now with the fires. You know, people, have kind of realized over the last couple of years how important it is that sometimes you just have to shut your home down. You can't sit with the windows open all day in the summer when you have the fires that are rolling through.
Yeah, it's hard on a lot of people, so I think that it's a good idea to plan ahead and try to figure this stuff out. And there's some good inexpensive solutions, and then there's some very high-end solutions as well. So yeah, we have a wide range of things that we can do to help.
And the website again, sensibleheat.net. And there are places there where you can contact Sensible Heating and Cooling, and you can have a conversation too if you have questions about it there. We certainly invite that. The story that caught my attention, this was the Fox News story, Washington's war on air conditioning heats up. The way that they pinned it was interesting to me. And again, I'm not HVAC expert. You are. I always say Freon, you know, is inside air conditioners. And that hasn't been the case in years and years and years and years. That was a name. That was not a chemical, right?
Right. Yeah, it was just a brand name. So R22 is the chemical name for Freon. And it was, I believe, produced by Dow Chemical. And so then the next generation was R410. And that was given the brand name Puron by Carrier Corporation. And then that's been around now for about 20 years. And now the EPA is saying that's not as environmentally friendly as what they originally were touting. So now they're moving towards other refrigerants for residential application. And that's supposed to be more environmentally friendly. So there's going to be another shift towards that other refrigerant. I don't know if they've come up with the name for it yet or not, but in general, refrigerant is just the generic name for the gas slash liquid that moves through the system that's used to remove the heat from the house and reject it to the outside.
So this latest one, it's expensive, right?
They're all pretty expensive. The newest one isn't commonly available yet. They are raising the price on the old R22 to the point where if it's an old R22 system, it doesn't even really make sense much to work on those systems anymore. It's better to just replace them. The Puron systems are the most popular out there for residential right now. And so those will be around for, you know, quite a while at this point, but they're definitely starting to shift us more towards a newer generation. So I would say in the next 5 years or so, there's going to be probably a major shift. And then the Puron will be phased out over the next, I'd say, 10 to 15 years.
So what does that mean to somebody that's middle class and air conditioner's not working very well? Man, do I have to go out and buy a new air conditioner kind of thing because of all these changes in the regulations? Or is it going to cost me more just to get this one fixed because of the new regs?
Yeah, that's a common question that our technicians run into. So what we do is we help people evaluate what's going to be their best option. And it, a lot of it has to do with the age of the existing unit. And, you know, in this area, we see most commonly that furnaces and air conditioners last 15 to 20 years. And so if the unit's, say, up to 10 years old, then it probably doesn't make sense to replace it. Once it starts getting over 10 years old, then, you know, we don't really think that replacing a 10 to 15-year-old unit is necessary unless it has a major problem. But then once it gets above 15 years old, even minor problems would probably make more sense to replace the unit than try to repair it.
It's not as simple as just refilling the, recharging the chemical that you need. I mean, they're not supposed to leak, but they do.
Right. So there's a lot of components, electrical and mechanical components that can fail that don't affect the refrigeration. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you do have to do something inside the refrigeration system, then what we have to do is we have to recover the old refrigerant, do the repair, and either put the refrigerant back in or put new refrigerant in. And so if we have to go into that part of the system, that's more complicated. The system is not supposed to leak. And so if we do find a leak, then we should do a leak search, which entails a fair amount of labor. And then once we find the leak, by EPA regulations, we have to repair it and then put refrigerant back in. So in the future, going forward, it doesn't leak refrigerant into the atmosphere.
That's another cost.
Yeah, all this stuff adds up. And you know, it's like everything else. The labor costs and overhead costs have really gone up a lot in the last, you know, 6 months especially. But, you know, it's, you know, we try to contain our costs as best we can. But, you know, everything costs money. And so the longer it takes a technician, you know, the more expensive it is to do the repair.
So it makes more sense to, if there's a big leak, if there is a problem, it probably makes more sense just to buy a new unit, right?
Yeah, especially, you know, again, like if it's over a certain age, then the technician can help the client evaluate what the best option is. And, you know, if it makes more sense to repair, then we'll do that. If it makes more sense to replace, and that's what we'll give options on.
How much does that change? Because you gave timelines, 5 to 10 years. 10 years is good. You know, you don't like to necessarily have to replace after 10 years. That's good. Once it gets to 15, that's about when you start to hit the threshold of, you know, minor problems start to become, and more minor problems seem to crop up, and it turns into major problems. That's different than it was is it 10 years ago or maybe more 20 years ago? Like, I feel like these units are being built better quality, installed better, and lasting longer.
Yeah, so when I'd say 10 or 15 years ago, the manufacturers had a 5-year warranty on all the parts, and these days everything is a 10-year parts warranty. So if something breaks and it's under 10 years old and you need a new part, then chances are that, you know, if the unit is 5 years old or so, it's going to have a 10-year warranty on it. But, you know, once it gets past that warranty period, then a lot of the newer units, the downside is that the parts are more expensive, especially like circuit boards. So, you know, if the parts are out of warranty and it's a lot of labor expense, then, yeah, then it makes a lot more sense to just replace the unit.
Well, it's a good jumping off point. The, you know, Washington with the, I want to make sure I get it right here, Washington's war on air conditioning heats up. Now, remember where that comes from. That's Fox News. It's regulations. It's whatever. I mean, you guys deal with, you know, regulations all the time, and new regulations sometimes, you know, cost people, doesn't matter what industry, maybe a little bit more money. But it was a good point for us to kind of start spinning our way through just talking air conditioning. Okay, here's a question, and I wonder if you get this from some of your potential clients and clients as well. And it sounds weird to say, but can't I replace my air conditioner with a heat pump?
Yes, and that's definitely been a lot more popular of an option, I would say, in the last 3 or 4 years. And the reason for that is because a lot of people are putting solar panels on their house. And so what a heat pump is it's an air conditioner that has a reversing valve that allows that same unit to produce heat for the house in the wintertime. So the incremental cost of the heat pump is not that much greater than an air conditioning system. And if you do have solar panels, then it makes a lot of sense to try to take advantage of the electricity that's being generated in the wintertime to heat the house. And then you can use your standard gas furnace as your backup heat. Or if you want to be completely off of gas, then you can use electricity for your backup heat for your heat pump.
Are more and more people doing this?
Yeah, a lot more. It's become very popular for a lot of reasons. One is, you know, people are more conscious of climate change. And even though a certain percentage of electricity is being generated by gas and some coal still, about 40% of XL's grid is actually being, the electricity is being generated by renewables like solar, wind, hydro, things like that. So it's helping to reduce carbon emissions, and a lot of people are very aware of that. And then the other reason that heat pumps have become more popular is, frankly, because there's a lot of incentives to put in heat pumps. Right now, XL is doing a $1,000 rebate on cold weather heat pumps. And Denver started a program where you can get up to $9,000 on a cold weather heat pump. But that program has just started, so there's a lot of bugs in it. And but that just kind of demonstrates how important the heat pump technology is to the future.
We have information on some of those, certainly in our blogs. If you go to sensibleheat.net, you go to our blogs, and you can really search by category: indoor air quality, heating, cooling. You search heat pumps, you can find them, and you search XL rebates. We have those in our blogs as well, so people can always kind of look that up. If you have questions too, you can always get a hold of us at sensibleheat.net. You can catch us, the phone number 720-876-7166. We hear there's an energy crisis going on right now. That's another good reason. Everything needs to start going to electricity here. It sounds like we're going to run out of oil and natural gas because of all the sanctions and all the other things that are going on with the world events. Now, I've heard this before back in the 70s, that we're going to run out of oil. But electrification is a real thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's as much of a, you know, I don't think that we're running out of oil or gas anytime soon, but I think that, you know, because of the restrictions and a lot of environmental concerns that people are really pushing us towards using electricity. And you know, frankly, that's a good thing because there's some pretty weird things going on with weather and fires. And I was talking to a friend of mine with the Forest Service, and he said that fire behavior is things that they've never seen before. And there's a lot of talk about just, you know, moisture content of the soil and things like that. So it's a very real concern that a lot of people have.
So a heat pump, a little peace of mind as well for customers too. We find that a lot of people that do contact sensible heating and cooling, that weighs on their mind now.
Yeah. No, we have a very large percentage of our customers that are very environmentally conscious, and you know, frankly, those customers are, you know, sort of at the cutting edge, helping us drive this technology, and we're pushing our manufacturers to provide more heat pumps to us, and they're a little bit behind the curve, and I think our industry is behind the curve as well.
Last question, and it touches more on that, the buzzword, you know, supply chain issues because of the pandemic, but really this isn't necessarily pandemic driven. This is the HVAC industry trying to catch up, right?
Yeah, I would say the pandemic has definitely caused some supply chain issues. And I think manufacturers weren't as prepared for the market demand that's being shown right now. So I know that we weren't. We've been kind of caught off guard, but we've been early adopters in our area as far as like heat pump technology. And so I think, you know, we're probably three to 5 years ahead of the curve. We've been doing geothermal heat pumps for the last 10 years. So that's a lot of what the company was founded on. And so doing air source heat pumps was sort of a natural thing for us to adopt as well.
It's amazing. I hear more and more about them. I know you guys install more and more of them. It is something. If you have questions about them, sensibleheat.net is the place to go. We'll talk about it on future podcasts, but always information on our blogs. And Phil, it's pretty easy. You make a phone call to us too. You're willing to answer a lot of questions for people.
Sure. Absolutely.
All right. That's our Sensible Heating and Cooling podcast for the month. You want to comment? You can. Right on our website. You can find us certainly here at sensibleheat.net. And any questions you can bring to us as well, and maybe some suggestions. If some of those questions, we'll do a future podcast, maybe answer some of those questions as well. For Phil Jensen, I'm Corey Lopez. We'll talk to you next time.